everyone. Welcome to Trending Now with Josh Arnold and Rick Moore. I am Rick Moore. Josh is here. Our producer and engineer is Bill Proposky. And we cap off the week here with some interesting interviews up on the table. This is a weekly program. We try to do it every Friday at 10 a.m. So let people know that we are live, but you can also check it out on demand. Just to almost, you know, within minutes after we're done, we get it posted on the website. Anyway, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
What's up?
I have Mary Margaret Moore from the Independent Living Center of the North Shore in Cape Ann as our first guest.
Where is that? Where is that located?
That's in Salem.
In Salem, okay.
Salem. And then I have Amanda Orlando Kesterson from Gloucester, who's the chairwoman of the Republican City Committee for Gloucester, and was a recent participant in a panel that observed the debate and commented with the local Gloucester Daily Times.
Should be fascinating. She's extremely active, and I love seeing some of her posts on social networks.
And then I have Cynthia McClory, who is the executive director of North Shore Community Mediation Center in Beverly. And she's going to talk about what mediation is, why it's a growing field, and what their group does.
I thought it was meditation.
No, it's mediation.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. Well, we'll listen in. And I have an interview that I'll be running later on in the program with Heather Atwood. She has a blog called Food for Thought. She has a tremendous cookbook and talks with us almost every other week here on MSO News Sports. So we'll have Heather's interview coming up as well. We'll be right back with our first interview.
The Gloucester House Restaurant at historic Seven Seas Wharf, 63 Rogers Street, Gloucester. This is owner Lenny Linquata.
We provide service and product better than anybody else. It comes directly from our boats right to your plate. We have fishermen that work great for us. We are wholesalers that we buy what we want to serve to our customers, and we put the rest of it right out in the market.
The Gloucester House Restaurant. Visit thegloucesterhouse.com.
This is the freshest seafood you can get from our boats to your plate.
People come in, take a seat, you're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. Treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan, plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our first guest is Mary Margaret Moore. Please welcome you to the program, Mary, and tell us about you a little bit.
Thank you, Josh. I'm a woman who's 67 and a half years old, and I've been living since my late teens with disabilities and working in many different arenas to try and make sure that myself and everybody I know and more people I know with disabilities get access to what we need to be able to get jobs and have families and live lives.
Great. Now, your office is in Salem, and you're active in many fronts in human services. Share with us some of the things that you're tasked with and some of the things that you've been able to attain in the time that you've been working in this capacity.
Well, for the last 18 years, I've been the executive director for the Regional Service and Advocacy Center that serves the North Shore and Cape Ann from Melrose to Rockport, called the Independent Living Center North Shore Cape Ann. And we're a nonprofit, 501c3, incorporated in 1987, so coming up on our 30th anniversary in a short time. And we're part of the national network of Centers for Independent Living, which started in the 70s. We're in federal statute. We wrote the rules that got us into federal regulation because what happened in the early 70s was what we call the disability rights movement, starting on the West Coast when a group of folks who are going to college out there in their freshman year at University of California, Berkeley, after they had been accepted and went for registration, were basically told, you can't live on campus, we have no place for you, maybe we shouldn't have accepted you, but now that you're here, we'll make up we'll make up a place for you guys to stay during the day, and then you got to get out at night. It's the infirmary. You have to get out during the day, but you can stay there at night. It's the infirmary, because that's the only accessible place we have on campus. And Eric Roberts and others who were in that situation began organizing and starting the first Center for Independent Living in the country. Since then, there's close to 500 different centers. And fundamentally, our rallying cry is nothing about us without us. We're consumer-controlled, consumer-driven, and it's the person that decides how they want to live their life as independently as they choose. So that's what I've been doing the past 18 years with folks here up on the North Shore in KPN, helping a lot of people who have been trying to go back home because their only services have been in nursing homes, and they now want to, you know, not live there. They've gone there temporarily, and they need help getting out to live with their families and have accessible ramps and in-home supports and transportation so they can regain their jobs and live with their family. So we work with folks in nursing homes that want to return to the community, help advocate for them to get what they need to do that. And we work with anybody in the community with any kind of disability of any age to help them reach their goals, their career path, their opportunity for them to do things that people without disability just do automatically. So we help guide them, and all of us are folks with all types of disabilities as well. Does that give you a flavor?
It certainly does. I know that you received an award recently in the middle of September. Would that be the Thomas P. Hopkins Disability Award?
Yes.
Tell us about that, please.
Well, I was just so startled and honored. The Mass Office on Disability, with the director there, David D'Arcangelo, was having their second disability summit. And at the first summit last year, at the 25th anniversary of the civil rights legislation, you know, the Americans with Disability Act, we were celebrating that, and he instituted an award from the Commonwealth of Mass called the Thomas P. Hopkins Award in honor of Tom Hopkins, who is the head of the Architectural Access Board and has been a major advocate for accessibility by people with disabilities in the Commonwealth. This year he called me and said, "Mary Margaret, we'd like to give the award to you."
Wow, that's great.
I was highly honored, I'm very, very blessed that I've been able to get support through my career all these years to be able to cope with living with my mobility disabilities and then additional ones as they've developed, and be able to be an advocate for people who aren't in the positions that I've been able to be in. And I really appreciate this award that recognizes that's what I've done, but it isn't me. It's because of all the other people that I've come in contact with that have been so supportive and walking with me and helping on so many issues to get things more inclusive and accessible for all Americans, particularly in Massachusetts, and specifically for me on the North Shore and KPN where I live.
And you're the clerk of the Greater North Shore Link Board. Can you tell us about that organization, what they do, and what your role has been and how that's going?
Sure. In 2002, the federal government had an epiphany in the Administration on Aging, as well as Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, and they started talking about how they wanted to find a way to take down what we've developed inadvertently from good intentions, which is silos, where people who are aging, who have the same life needs as people with disabilities, can't get access to the same services and supports. So they decided to come out with something called an Aging and Disability Resource Center, a consortium model, that would basically talk with the different structures that we've built for funding through Medicare and Medicaid, which is for a lot of people who are on Medicare and Medicaid have disabilities. And for people who are aging as we age, and I can say that at 67 and a half, you get some functional limitations in our disabilities if you haven't already had them earlier in your life. You get more. That's my story. You get more as you get older.
I understand. Yep.
And how do we make it easier for people to get access to what they need and know what their options are? So Massachusetts was one of the first states in 2003 to respond to this idea, and we brought in, Massachusetts did some money from the federal government to develop a model. How do we make it so that someone, when they call one agency, whether it be aging or disability, Centers for Independent Living, don't have to keep telling their story over and over and over again? How can they get all the information for people who are seniors and people who have disabilities all in one call? And how do we make it so that the aging and Centers for Independent Living and other agencies can make that service net available to anybody that calls and their families, if their families are major players? So we began up in Merrimack Valley with the first model, and since it was coming to the North Shore KPN subsequent years, I made sure that I was up there on that advisory board and called together Greater Lynn Senior Services, North Shore Elder Services, Senior Care, what's now called Element Care. In those days, it was Elder Service Plan of the North Shore. Key agencies serving people who are seniors with the Center for Independent Living to try and plan, how do we do this? And we set up the Aging and Disability Resource Consortium of the Greater North Shore and called in all kinds of folks, users of services and other agencies, and have been basically since 2003 working to try and address issues of easier, streamlined access for folks on the North Shore and KPN. A few years ago, with all the changes that have been going on with the healthcare system from the Affordable Care Act, we decided to incorporate, and that's where we've come into being with the Greater North Shore Link. And we've been now able to be a real synthesis for folks to get access if they're part of what they call the dually eligible implementation in Massachusetts. Those folks that are on Medicare and Medicaid, and in Massachusetts calls it the One Care, system, to make sure that folks on Medicare and Medicaid have better integrated information from their medical care with the full array of long-term service and supports through the ADRC. The options program that anybody can call either Independent Living Center, North Shore Elder Services, GLIS, Greater Lynn Senior Services, Senior Care, where anybody can call to test out their options for long-term service and support, particularly looking at options other than just thinking that one has to go to a nursing home. That's another key program. And we have an annual conference every year. We're pulling together one that's just coming up. It's going to be our 10th conference. So we pull folks together from the whole community to come and hear folks talk about issues of concern. And the one that's coming up this year is October 19th, and it's basically going to really help us look at what the challenges are and the opportunities are. Anybody's interested in knowing more about the Greater North Shore Link has a wonderful web page. You know, just type in North Shore Link, Greater North Shore Link, you know, and you can find out information on that. And every other month, we have a partners meeting where we come together and share things. This past partners meeting, we had folks from an agency up in the North Shore that helps folk get better access to hearing and hearing aids and hearing supports. So we highlight different topics.
Great, great. We got a few minutes left, and I wanted to shift a little bit to, talk a little bit about work that you do on behalf of the disabled in creating access for voting. I know that's a big issue, and can you share some thoughts with us about that?
Yes, and in fact, people think that you know, because we have the Americans with Disability Act, and it's 26 years old, that there's no barriers anymore. Everything's fine. Well, there's still many, many barriers, and one of those is getting access even to vote. There's just been a report that the Pew Institute has put out, which looks at people with disability compared with non-disabled citizens in their voting, and it highlights some of the concerns that we always try and address here at the ILC and SCA, which is people don't know how to vote. How are they going to get there? Is it going to be accessible? It's too hard to register. I don't really understand who the candidates are and where to look. It's too complex. So even though the majority of people with disabilities that vote, which is, you know, a significant number of people, a lot of them choose to do it by absentee ballot. And now here this year in Massachusetts, you know, the early voting.
Yep.
We have been working to ensure that people that we're working with know about early voting. All year we help people register to vote. We talk about it as we're working with folks. Are you registered? That's your right. We will be putting up on our webpage when it gets closer to the voting, ways folks, if they are voting in person, can get transportation to the polls. We've also, over the years, always done voting site reviews to make sure that they're accessible, and have had in the 25 communities we served, helped some of the communities at some of their voting sites figure out how to ensure that their staff know how to use the voting machine for people who have vision impairment. Even though they may have it there, sometimes folks have asked to use it, yet it isn't hooked up.
Yeah.
Obeying is how to make sure it's running and it has the right connections. So we've helped educate some of the communities where there's been problems like that of how to make sure that doesn't occur. Just accessibility issues. I know I went to a voting site, and it was at a school, and the buzzers for the doors, they had someone had to always release those from inside, and I had never known that before because I had recently moved to this neighborhood and this new precinct, and there was nobody there to
let you in.
Yeah, never mind, that's not accessible for people.
No.
So helping the school refigure that out. So it's just things like that are critical. What we've also know is that people with living with disabilities cut across all economic, socioeconomic, all political party lines, have the same hopes and dreams as people without disability, or just as varied. Yet, some people think, oh, people with disability, oh, they don't really care about voting, or they're all going to vote for blah, blah, blah. That's not true.
Yeah.
So to remind us all, I also really urge everybody, if you're having trouble and you don't have a disability and you don't know how to register to vote or information, you can also call us. We provide information referral to anybody that calls us. But voting is a fundamental responsibility so that we have all our rights as American citizens. And I urge everybody, get out there and vote, please.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for spending some time with us today and sharing your story and all the good work that you're doing on behalf of those with disabilities. Thank you, Mary Margaret.
Thank you, Josh, and keep on doing what you're doing.
Thanks a lot. Take care now. Have a good day. Bye.
Bye.
People come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. Treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright Double Hung Insert Window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plastow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service, and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Amanda Orlando Kesterson. Amanda, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Josh. Thanks for having me.
Well, great. Now, we usually ask folks, tell us a little bit about you, your bio, and so forth, and we want to get in and talk about your role with the Republican City Committee and the work you've done recently with the panel.
Okay, great. Well, as you said, I'm Amanda Orlando Kesterson. I was born here in Gloucester. As were my parents, Joe and Connie Orlando. And we lived here for a little bit in Magnolia. We moved to Manchester when I was in elementary school, and we lived there for 10 years. And I graduated from Manchester High School in 1997, and then I went on to Boston College, class of 2001. And when I graduated, I was hired as an English teacher at what was then Manchester Essex Regional High School. So I went back to my alma mater and taught for 5 years there in the English department. While I was there, I attained my Master of Arts in Teaching English from Salem State College. And then in 2006, after I'd had my oldest son, Alex, I didn't want to work as many hours as I was working as an English teacher, so I decided I would work part-time at my father's law office, Orlando & Associates, doing, administrative work and I've been there ever since.
Great.
And turned into a full-time job, and now I'm the office manager here, and I really enjoy it. I really like working for my family business.
Super. Now, you are also the chairwoman of the Gloucester Republican City Committee. Tell us a little bit about that and what you do there.
I am. Well, I didn't start out. I was never really involved in politics at any level. I always followed it, and you know, I'm an avid reader of the paper and watching the news, and I'm sort of a political junkie. I love all the, you know, the competitive nature of politics. I really enjoy it, but I never was involved as an activist until 2013, just after President Obama was reelected. I decided that I was unhappy with how things were going in the country, and I wanted to do something, and I didn't really know what that was. So I was at the time on the email list for the Gloucester Republican City Committee. At the time, the chairman was Luke Noble, and I was on his email list, and he was sending out emails about, you know, meetings and events and things to go to. So I just started to show up to things and learn more about what you can do from a local level to start the change that you want to see in the world, basically. And I went from there to join the committee in the summer of 2013. They asked me to be the treasurer. Shortly after that, I served as treasurer, and then in early 2015, Luke was leaving. He was just overwhelmed by responsibilities at the state level, and he said, you know, what do you think about running for chairwoman? And so I did, and the committee elected me, and I've been the chairwoman ever since. I really enjoy it. It's a great way to get involved at every level of politics, but particularly here in Gloucester, I think it's important that conservatives in this city have a voice, and so I'm really happy to lead a group of them in attempting to be part of the political conversation.
Great. Now, you were recently involved as a panelist for the Gloucester Daily Times in relation to the Trump-Clinton debate. Tell us about how you came to that role and what it was like and what the experience entailed.
Sure. Well, last week, Ray Lamont from the Gloucester Times called me. He said that the Gloucester Times was looking for people to be on Twitter during the debate this past Monday night and to tweet their responses to what was happening, and that they wanted a range of political perspectives, and would I be willing to do it? And I thought that sounded like a lot of fun. I was going to be watching the debate anyway, so I thought, yeah, well, that sounds great, and I think it's important that we have a range of political perspectives responding to what's happening that so many millions of people are watching. So I told them I'd be happy to do it, and Monday night, while the debate was going on, I just tweeted responses to what was happening, my impressions of things, my thoughts on what the candidates were saying, and I was joined by many others doing the same, so the audience who wanted to follow it could follow all of the conversation.
Sure.
And it was really fun because it ended up that many of the people tweeting were referencing each other.
Okay.
In responding to each other's perspectives and opinions. So it made for a more vibrant conversation. It was really fun, and it was a fun way for the Gloucester Times to get the community kind of involved in reacting in live to what was happening on TV. So it was fun.
And what are some of your observations about the debate, if you care to share those with us?
Sure. Well, I think that going into the debate, I expected Hillary Clinton to come out swinging because the polls are showing that many of the battleground states have them at a dead heat in states where she was previously ahead, and Trump was surging. And so I expected that she would be right on top of things and ready to take him on. And he's a pretty fiery guy, so I knew that she sort of had a big job as far as remaining calm and portraying herself as the candidate who could stay calm as opposed to his sort of more fiery, blustery personality. And I think when I was watching the debate, that really came through, although he was much calmer than I think a lot of people expected him to be. And because of that, because he was clearly making an effort to stay calm and portray an air of sort of a presidential quality of not overreacting to things, I think he missed a lot of opportunities to point out deficiencies in her answers during the debate, which I think was unfortunate.
Yeah, I wondered about that. Was that a planned strategy, you think, on his part, or was he? On the one hand, if he were more in attack mode, he comes across as a bully, is that the right read, do you think, or?
Yeah, I think that I'm pretty sure the Trump campaign talked a lot about how he was going to come across to the audience. Remember, he is debating a woman, and that's a reality when you're a man, and he's obviously a very no nonsense kind of guy. When he's debating a woman, he does have to be aware of how he comes across to the audience. If he's too aggressive, he could look like a bully.
Okay.
And I think people don't really see that as, I think Hillary Clinton is an extremely smart and tough woman. But the reality is, to the average person, they don't really want to see a man, kind of appearing to yell at a woman. I mean, I don't think people like that visual. So he does have, I think, in the sense that when you're debating, you can take each other on the issues, but he does have to tread a little lightly. And I think she knew it, and she was capitalizing on it. Towards the end of the debate, she was bringing up previous statements he'd made about women, and she did that strategically. She knows that it's a difficult thing for him to, because he's so brutally honest when he says things, it's difficult for him in a debate setting to respond well to those on those issues. That's why she brings them up, and they help her. So I do think his campaign, sat back and really strategized that. However, I think he missed a lot of opportunities to take her on the issues, and whether she's a woman or a man, that's what the debate should have been about. It should not have been about, how someone holds themselves or, issues 30 years ago from his career. It should be about who's best to lead the country forward. And he missed opportunities to point out where he is the better candidate to do that.
Do you think that how much of the debate is about the candidates themselves setting some sort of expectations of how they're going to do or how they should be able to do, and then trying to meet, attain, or exceed those? How do you think he did in that regard?
Well, I think that what he did very well was tie Hillary Clinton to the policies and the mindset of the Obama administration. And that is not a winning issue for her, because the country over the last 8 years has moved strongly to the right as far as electing conservatives to the House, the Senate. Republicans hold 31 governorships across the country. So when she's tied to Barack Obama, it hurts her. And he did a very good job of tying her and saying, look, if you elect her, we're going to get more of the same. Are you happy with how things are? Because if you're happy with how things are, you should elect Hillary Clinton, because she's going to be more of the same. But if you're not happy with how things are, we have to make a change. And I thought his other big advantage over her, which he did capitalize on, was to paint her as the ultimate political insider. I mean, she's been in politics now for 30 years. She knows everybody in the political world, and while she will argue that that's a benefit to the average voter who really sees both parties as pretty corrupt and has been throughout this election cycle with the primary, and Republicans had issues and Democrats had issues, both the parties sort of taking control of things, and voters didn't like that. When you are looking at the average voter, they don't want more of the same. They don't want the ultimate political insider. So Donald Trump saying, look, I'm not a politician. I was a businessman. I come at it from a different perspective. I'm not going to be just another guy that can be bought.
We had Bruce Tobey on last spring on the show talking about the election. And I made the observation to him then that Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump were eating from the same trough, that they, even though they were divergent, very, very different perspectives politically and came at things from completely different perspectives, they seemed to feed off of the same issue of the outsider or the underdog or whatever. Do you think that, do you agree with that, I guess, first? And do you think that that is still prevalent as we move through the primaries into the general election?
I absolutely agree with that. I think they both tapped into a populist message during their campaigns that voters really responded to. You remember that Donald Trump ran against 16 other candidates on the Republican side, all of whom had vast political experience, and he, in almost every primary, he just crushed them. Bernie Sanders, he just continued to just be the guy who was peppering Hillary Clinton in all her sort of insider deals, and people liked that too on the Democratic side. I think that they both tapped into the same message, and because of that, they were both successful to different ends. Obviously, sure. You know, Donald Trump became the nominee, Bernie Sanders did not, but they both were very similar. I think the average voter in this country is tired of how things are. They want change, and they recognize, and they're right, you're not going to get change if you just keep electing the same people over and over again who are inside the bubble. And Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, to a large extent, were seen as outside of that.
Great.
Someone who could look at it with a new perspective and actually make some positive change. So I do think that you're right on that, and great. I think the voters are seeing it.
Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and maybe we can have you back at a later time, either closer, getting closer to or just after the election, and share some more of your thoughts with us.
I'd love that. Thanks so much, Josh.
Thank you, Amanda. Take
care. Alrighty, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Looking for a reliable place to produce your team's uniforms or your business's corporate apparel? Then Sarkisian Sportswear is the place for you. Conveniently located on Route 1 South in Peabody, Mass., Sarkisian Sportswear handles all aspects of your needs, from price quoting to providing visual proofs to production completion. Visit our website, SarkisianSports.com, to view our monthly specials, vendor catalogs, and to request a quote. Remember, Sarkisian Sportswear is the place to go.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Cynthia McClory, who is the Executive Director of the North Shore Community Mediation Center. Cynthia, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Well, you start out with, tell us a little bit about yourself, your bio, your background, and so forth, and then we can talk a little bit about what North Shore Mediation Center does.
Okay, happy to do that. So I relocated to the Boston area after college and have been with the center for about 17 years, originally from Pennsylvania. And I previously had worked in college administration, admissions, and then also as a child advocate for the now defunct Office for Children. And I was recruited from that office to help the then Salem Mediation Program create a juvenile mediation program in the Salem and Peabody courts. So that's where I started my training and exposure to mediation. That program, the Salem Mediation Program, lost its funding and closed, and those volunteer mediators felt very passionate about the work they were doing and pooled their money and created the North Shore Community Mediation Center in 1994. So that's how I got to this field. Mediation is something that a lot of people are not familiar with, but we're hoping that that will change.
Mm-hmm. And so mediation is a growing, would you say, is a growing occupation and approach to problem solving. What are some of the areas where mediation is being deployed?
Well, it truly is growing, and we're hoping that it will grow in faster, and because it has its the community mediation has its roots in really the 60s, when people were not happy with the courts, they were not happy with the communities and the involvement with the courts, and so the courts actually started some community mediation programs, and then eventually it became in programs in the community themselves. So mediation is, a conversation, if you will. It's a way for people who are struggling with any kind of conflict that they might be able to own the resolution, have a very strong part in working out the resolution, and therefore be more satisfied with how it is resolved. It's voluntary. It's neutral, and it has, our goal is to sort of help people make that social change from, calling the police, calling their attorney, filing cases in court, to starting with this process, so that they can kind of sort out what's really important to them. And then eventually, if it's not successful, use those other resources that are obviously very important in resolving disputes. It's a wonderful process.
Well, mediators are called neutrals, and I'm just in my background, having taken coursework in it and done some mediation, I know that you have to kind of sell that to the people who come forward to have their disputes mediated, because I think that what I've observed, at least, is that there's a tendency for a party or parties to think that the mediator's role is something that it's not, that it's almost like a judge or a clerk in a court, and that they're going to evaluate whose story will they like better and decree what the solution is, as opposed to, but really that's not their role at all. Their role is the facilitator in trying to get both parties to come up to a compromise or an understanding that works for both parties. You still here? Hello? Are you there? Nothing. It just
stop.
No, it didn't go.
Okay, well, let's take a break.
Harrington's Trophy and Awards has been rewarding the North Shore for over 25 years. Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington.
And I am Marty Harrington, and we are known for our local family business, providing custom trophies, plaques, screen printing, embroidery, and much more. We offer a variety of services such as engraving wedding gifts, medals for charity walks, youth sports trophies and uniforms. From the newest style performance wear to your everyday work shirts, we are your one-stop shop. Whether it's a fantasy football, warm-up suits for your team, end-of-the-year banquet gifts, or recognizing excellence, we pride our business on our exceptional customer service and quality products. Located in Lynn, or visit our website at harringtontrophy.com.
The Bradford Tavern Restaurant in Raleigh is unique, with modern touches in a rustic setting offering the finest steaks, freshest seafood, and many quality daily specials. Serving lunch and dinner, the Bradford Tavern is open 7 days a week. The restaurant features two separate function rooms, ideal for every need, including business meetings, bridal and baby showers, or any special event. The Bradford Tavern is located at 87 Haverhill Street, Route 133 in Raleigh, and online at bradfordtavern.com. We hope to see you soon at the Bradford Tavern. The Institution for Savings has always believed in giving back to our communities, because our communities are such great places to live and work. Last year alone, we donated and pledged more than $3.9 million to local nonprofits, including local hospitals, schools, food pantries, art organizations, and more. Named one of Boston Business Journal's top philanthropic companies, we are proud to be your local hometown bank. InstitutionForSavings.com. Member FDIC, DIF, Equal Housing Lender.
If you are interested in replacing your home's kitchen cabinets, please see the kitchen cabinet showrooms at any of Moynihan Lumber's three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Many aspects of estate planning are interrelated, and you can turn to attorney Bob Madruga for full-service estate planning to help you develop a comprehensive plan in providing for your future. Bob will work with you through the years to adapt your plan as needed, and he can assist you with managing wills, trust, probate, and taxes. Visit the law offices of Robert J. Madruga at 128 Main Street, Gloucester, or call today for an appointment at 978-283-6883.
This game is brought to you in part by the Gloucester House Restaurant, offering the freshest seafood right off their boats to your plate. Sarkisian Sportswear, delivering quality team and corporate apparel located on Route 1 South in Peabody and at SarkisianSports.com. Lynn Museum, Lynn Arts, preserving Lynn's past and promoting Lynn's future at 590 Washington Street. Columbia Insurance of Lynn, offering auto, home, condo, renters, and business insurance, delivering complete peace of mind. Attorney Robert J. Madruga, see Bob for estate planning and tax preparation. Gloria Food Store, Rantoul Street, Beverly. Honeydew Donuts of Lynn, Salem, Malden, and East Boston.
Back at the Pleasant Street Tea Company, I'm Rick Moore with Heather Atwood of Food for Thought. It took me a second there. And speaking of Food for Thought, we're going to talk with Heather about different things as we always do. And I don't even know where to start, Heather. Where should we start?
I think we should start with a pig roast, a Cuban pig roast.
Okay, you do this to me. Cuban pig roast as opposed to pig roast.
It's a Cuban pig roast. Yep, that is. It's kind of a trend. And this, all right, just imagine how funny.
You kill me because we talked about this for half an hour before, and I had no idea. Okay.
Did we already do the whole Cuban pig roast?
No.
Oh.
No,
all right. No. All right. So no. It has local roots. This pig roast, because my pig came from Essex, raised very kindly on a farm in Essex, mm-hmm, by this lovely couple, Liz and Edgar. Mm-hmm. Liz and Edgar also raise chickens. They have the most delicious chickens I've ever had in my life. You can purchase their chickens often at the Cape Ann Farmers Market, or if you go to their website or their, I think they have a website. It's a website, yes, called Salt Marsh Farms. They will announce there where they are going to, where you can purchase their chickens. Mm-hmm. So, but they also... We're running out of stuff?
No, we're fine.
Okay, so... for instance, I pick my chickens up at Cedar Rock Farms in West Gloucester, but they also go to Alprilla Farm in Essex. Anyway, they raise chickens, pigs, and lamb.
Mm-hmm.
And I... was my pig was delivered to me by Edgar from his farm, and it was, and we proceeded to have a pig roast. Now, the really interesting thing about this pig roast is that we roasted the pig in something called a La Caja China. That means Chinese box in Spanish. I think it's Spanish. And this box was developed as a way of roasting pigs. Martha Stewart has roasted a pig in, mm-hmm, a La Caja China. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the whole it thing right now. It's a way of, you know, they used to do it on a spit, and you'd have to keep the fire going all night long, and they turn the pig on the spit. Well, this is a very well-insulated wooden box, and you put your pig in there. You have a surface of hot coals over the pig, and one time during the process, you turn the pig over. Anyway, it's very cool, and we have a La Caja China. The funny part about this is we were planning on doing this Cuban pig roast in the La Caja China. We received an invitation from a friend. Hey, in 2 weeks, we're going to do a Cuban pig roast in a La Caja China. The exact same thing. Mm-hmm. So this is happening. There are lots of people having these pig roasts in this machine. Not a machine, it's a box. And we had it this weekend. 70 people came. It was absolutely delicious. But I was also, I needed a consultant, mm-hmm, because I've never done this before, right? Mm-hmm. So my friend Danielle from Pastayo Via Corta, I've spoken about her before. She has the pasta shop on Center Street.
Right, right.
So she is really well-versed in Cuban pig roasts. She had a Cuban friend for many years, and she attended many Cuban pig roasts. So she said, I know exactly what you have to do. She came to our house 2 days before we started the pig, and we rubbed the whole thing over in salt. This was 100 pounds of pig, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then we studded the meat with garlic, and then we rubbed a paste of probably a half a pound of garlic and 2 bottles of bitter orange juice, which is not like orange juice at all. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a Cuban product. So pureed garlic and bitter orange juice and dried oregano, and we rubbed that all over the meat. It was so amazing.
So what is the final result as a taste? What does that do for, how do you describe that?
Oh, it had a roasted meat, savory, fragrant kind of, mm-hmm, taste. It was subtle. The garlic was subtle, but you definitely got a little bit of it. But the meat was incredibly moist, and you had, I would say, a vague hint of the garlic and the orange. But then Danielle consulted further and taught me about making mojo. So mojo is a sauce that you put over the pig when it's served. So we had this great big, it was very dramatic when this pig came out of the fire. So everyone's like, yeah, it takes like four men to carry the thing to the table or this big table we had set up. And then the meat was very, very moist, so it kind of fell open. You didn't even need to cut it too much. So people were so hungry at that point, they're grabbing at the meat, and they're so excited to have this thing. So I just took a ladle and poured this amazing sauce, which was tons more garlic, tons of lime juice, salt, dried oregano. It was mostly lime. Think of like a margarita being poured all over this incredibly hot roasted pork. It was delicious.
How many people did it feed?
Oh, my goodness. We had 70 people there, and we had at least, we could have fed another 170, another 70, easily. A lot of people took meat home. But here's my marriage story, okay?
Okay.
Do not try to have a party like this if your husband is in a band, and the band is playing as entertainment at the party, because we almost got divorced over the fact that he was in the band the whole time, and I was left trying to run the party.
Uh-oh.
So that was a problem.
Okay.
But we've kind of amended that. But it was
a lot of
it
work,
was,
yeah.
It was a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
So
okay. I get that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I've been I'm not in a band, and I've had my problems with those things. Hosting.
So that's my marriage tip of the day.
Okay.
So
okay.
But it was a fun party. It was really fun.
I want to add, I want to make sure these levels are all right. They look like they're peaking for some reason. I want to ask you about fresh chicken, because I've had an experience just once with a fresh turkey, a freshly slaughtered turkey, and it was cooked and so on. And it was very difficult to get it cooked right. I put it that way. It was not good eating. It was very mealy. It was very rough and tough. And so freshly slaughtered chickens, you don't have to do anything to them. You can cook them as is.
I do. Mm. Yeah, I don't know anything about that, I have to confess. And the flavor in these chickens is just, it's like not a chicken I've had before. And I provided a couple to my friends at the Gloucester Fishermen's Wives, and they said they hadn't tasted a chicken like that since Sicily.
Okay.
So I don't know. And turkeys are, of course, different. They're so much bigger. And, you know, what they've been feeding on is going to make a big difference.
Yeah.
And how much they've been running around makes a big difference. But I really recommend the poultry at this Saltmarsh Farm.
Okay.
And I'm going to do a story on them soon.
Okay. Yeah. And what else do you have? You've got something else planned coming up that sounds pretty exciting?
Well, this is kind of like in the works. I'm working with the Gloucester Fresh website. The Gloucester Fresh website is a very beautiful website, and it is a means for the city to promote local fish. And you know, it always comes back to local fish for me, right? So go look at the site. It's really lovely. And we are working on a series of cooking videos to show people really great recipes with which to use local fish. I'm not in the videos. I'm just helping out.
Mm-hmm.
A woman named Annie Copps, who is the senior food editor at Yankee Magazine. She was a food editor at Boston Magazine, and she's done a lot of Today Show stints. She cooks in the middle of Times Square. She makes apple pies on the Today Show in the middle of Times Square. She has developed four recipes, one for redfish, one for whiting, one for pollock, and one for hake.
Mm-hmm.
I think hake. And they're not Sicilian recipes. They're not Gloucester recipes. They're Annie Copps recipes. They're super useful. They're super, super easy. They're kind of, I would say, modern, you know. And they're like, I know the whitefish recipe is kind of a pate that you can make with whitefish and use it as a spread, as an appetizer. That's one of the ones I remember.
So there will be more to come in the future about this stuff when it happens and so on.
Yes, yes. Okay. I will let you know when, certainly when they're up and when it really happens, and I'll tell you how it goes.
Absolutely.
When we
film. Okay, and finally, you were mentioning a restaurant up in Rockport?
Yes, my new favorite restaurant. Truthfully, I've only been there once, but I love it, and I'm going to still love it, I know, because I love the atmosphere. It's called Feather and Wedge. It's right on Main Street in Gloucester. It is the
Rockport.
Rockport. I said Gloucester.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I just want to be sure I have it.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it is Rockport. Mm-hmm. And what I was going to say is so many people are always looking for a place to dine before they go to the Shale and Lou.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the perfect place because you can get small plates, a really nice glass of wine. The feel of the restaurant inside feels like you are truly on a shop on Main Street in Rockport. You know, it has a kind of an old world Rockport feel, and yet it's also very beautiful and very contemporary.
Where is that? Is that near the, where the greenery was?
No, it's up from the, towards the greenery, across from the Rockport Art Association.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, as usual, my head is spinning. Anything else you want to mention here?
I will put one pitch in for one of my favorite events. I think we talked about this the last time it happened. The Spear and Lodge Swedish Pancake Supper is October 16th.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love this event because it's so old world Rockport. It's the Spear and Lodge has been there for 100 years, mm-hmm. I think. And they've been making Swedish pancakes for probably as long.
Okay.
And it's just a really like homey, lovely event.
Cuban pig roast Swedish pancakes. This is
right? I cover the earth.
You did. All right. With the story behind the story behind the recipe, that's Heather Atwood. I'm Rick Moore on MSONewsports.com. All right, we are back on the air, thank goodness. We had a failure here with our phones and our internet connection and everything else. And that happens. That's what you pay the good money for, and then it goes belly up, but I guess we're back. So.
Well, we'll hopefully be able to get Cynthia back next week and continue her interview.
Okay, and other guests you are
yes,
pursuing?
Yes, I've been talking to Barry Weiner and John Bell, who I hope to have on at a later time to talk about the 40th anniversary of the charter, strong mayor form of government in Gloucester.
Why is that so fascinating to you? You bring that up a lot.
Well, it just happened. I was reading different things, and I realized that this is 40 years ago this year that that new form of government came online.
Well, it wasn't a new form of government.
Well, no, it was new. It was new to Gloucester.
Yeah,
it was
right.
New to Gloucester.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Ah. Okay.
And Paul Crowley, executive director of Greater Lynn Senior Services, Paul Lenzikos, head of elder the Elder Services Program, among others.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. And we'll have a current events guest on Fridays as well. We had some lined up for today, but we lost our connection, so that takes care of that. Don't forget, we've got football tonight. A couple of games coming up. Our live streaming video game, weather permitting, and I think we will get the game underway. I just hope we've got the equipment covered. Will be Revere at Gloucester. That will be on Channel B audio. Radio Channel B, Radio Live B, will be the broadcast for Revere Gloucester, but that will be simulcast, the radio description simulcast on our video streaming as well. So we'll have both radio and video coverage of Revere at Gloucester tonight at 7, pregame around 6:30. And over on Channel A, it will be Danvers at Lynn Classical. Tim Kearns, Bill Newell will be at Manning Field to bring you that game. And Tim, Paul Ingram and I will be at Gloucester tonight, and then tomorrow it will be Lynn English at Beverly. I believe Marty Smith and Tim Kearns are doing that game, and that is, I think it's a later start. We'll have to get back to you on that, but on a pregame show, Bill Newell's pregame show, he's got the time on that. I think because of SATs, it's a later start than 1 p.m. So that'll do it for here. From here, on behalf of Josh Arnold and our something else you want?
Oh, I thought
you okay. Oh, Topsfield Fair opens up today,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Topsfield Fair, the Peabody Centennial Parade, all things good. Okay, have a great weekend. I'll see you tonight on football. For Josh Arnold, Bill Proposky, I'm Rick Moore. Bye-bye.